on Washington, Wednesday, June 10th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbas. In this edition, the future of Chrysler. It's official. The Supreme Court has allowed the merger to go through that will give Fiat control over Chrysler once Chrysler pays back its money to the federal government. We'll get reaction from Michigan Congressman Thaddeus McCotter, learn how his community outside of Detroit is dealing with all the automotive industry woes, and we'll get his reaction to many of the banks in this country getting permission to pay back the money they got from you. Also in this edition, terrorists now have the right to remain silent. The Obama administration has ordered FBI agents in Afghanistan to read Miranda rights to high-value terror suspects. We'll talk about it with Stephen Hayes of the Weekly Standard. Plus, evil lashes out in the nation's capital. An 89-year-old white supremacist opens fire at the U.S. Holocaust Museum, killing a security guard before being shot himself. We'll talk about the security response and the rash of shootings around the country with Jim Corey of the National Association of Chiefs of Police. All that, plus Wednesday's headlines and the latest consumer sentiment numbers are straight ahead on Dateline Washington. We begin with Congressman McCotter right now. My first guest in this edition is Michigan Congressman Thaddeus McCotter, a Republican from the Great Lakes State's 11th Congressional District. He's also a member of the House Republican leadership. We want to get his reaction to a flurry of events involving Chrysler in recent days, from a brief Supreme Court stay of the merger with Fiat to eventual clearance 24 hours later and then finalization of the deal here on Wednesday. And Congressman, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, first, it appeared as though the bondholders were going to get a longer and more scrutinizing look at this deal that the Obama administration put into the bankruptcy process, but 24 hours later, it was back on course. What was your thought at the time of the stay, and what's your reaction now?
Well, at the time of the stay, there was a lot of concern back in Michigan, because as we knew, that when we went into bankruptcy, you had Chrysler losing $100 million a day, you had the plants idled, you had workers at home, you had a lot of people worried about what their futures were going to be, even though we knew that there's going to be painful restructuring. The longer that company stayed in the bankruptcy process, the more cloudy the future became. You saw where there was the June 15th drop-dead date with Fiat where they could walk away or not. And so all we asked for when the judge issued the stay, Justice Ginsburg, was a speedy, equitable resolution so that we would, again, know what's going to happen with this. And now that the court has decided not to hear the full appeal, the announcement of the GM Fiat sale, or Chrysler Fiat sale, you have, well, we're not happy, at least we've removed uncertainty and we can start girding up to see a successful company in the future and keep as many people working as we can.
What do you make of Fiat essentially assuming control of Chrysler once the bankruptcy process is concluded? What do you know about their leadership and what it'll mean for the folks in your district and throughout the industrial Midwest who rely on their Chrysler jobs?
Well, obviously, we're glad that there was the merger of the two companies, because the other option that the Obama administration put forward was liquidation. So given a choice between liquidation and merger, obviously we supported the merger. Now going forward, what you're going to see is there's going to be a period where it's going to be where they try to mesh not only their corporate cultures, but in some ways the cultures between the workers. But I think that what you're going to see is a continued intent on the people that work at Chrysler, the people who were fortunate enough to retain their dealerships, the manufacturing base. Everyone wants this to continue because their entire lives are put into this. And if this merger does not work, then they're going to obviously be very bad off. What we're concerned about, as everyone is, we want to make sure that the company is flexible and resilient enough to respond to market forces, that they can repay the taxpayers and, again, keep people working. One of the big variables that will remain, however, as you know, is does the government decide to try to tell the company what type of cars to make? Because that would repeat the mistakes that the big three made back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, early 80s, where they thought they could dictate to consumers what type of cars would be available. That would be a mistake.
Let me have you answer your own question, Congressman. Do you believe the government will back down in terms of the micromanaging that many believe is happening right now in the auto industry, particularly with respect to Chrysler and GM? Or do you believe that once the bankruptcy process is done and the government perhaps gets a big chunk of the money that it's given to Chrysler back, that actual executives of the company will be making the day-to-day decisions?
Well, we're hopeful that there's a self-correcting mechanism within there. Obviously, the government has every reason to get the taxpayer loans repaid. That will require a strong company going forward that is being profitable, keeping people employed, selling product the public wants. If the government micromanages the company, tries to dictate what types of cars are available to consumers, they will be actually at cross purposes with their number one interest, which is to repay the taxpayers. So I would think that going forward, let's see how that mechanism works. Let's see if the government continues to understand that not only keeping Chrysler and the new Fiat going to keep people employed, let's see if they continue to understand that the more the company can respond to the markets, the more the company can respond to consumers, the more profitable it will be, and the quicker the government will get repaid.
What has been your personal contact with the so-called car czar, Dr. Montgomery, and how confident are you in how he's been leading this effort?
Well, Dr. Montgomery is the auto recovery chair. He's not in charge of the overseeing of the companies. He's in charge of overseeing the devastation that's going to occur within manufacturing communities to auto workers and people who lose their jobs because of these bankruptcies. So that's what he's doing. The delegation has been working with him collectively to try to make sure that we take care of the people who will be dislocated throughout this painful restructuring process. In terms of the auto czar, quote-unquote, for GM or others, again, there's a lot of czars around Washington. But all that we need to do is to make sure that these companies are allowed to make customers happy and sell product and repay taxpayers, keep people employed. You don't want the government micromanaging them. And again, it's too early to tell what will happen, but we're hopeful these companies will not be micromanaged.
Congressman, regular listeners will know that you're a frequent guest on the program, which we always appreciate, and that you represent the western suburbs of Detroit, and obviously this affects many of your constituents. This whole roller coaster over the past year or so, and really longer since the company's really started losing a lot of money, how are they dealing with these latest developments? What are you hearing from them most of all?
Well, in Michigan, the constituency, everyone, we understand that with the Obama administration's decision to go forward with the bankruptcies, that we have, in many ways, seen a radical change in our cherished way of life. We understand that. We're trying to take care of our fellow citizens in the communities that are affected. We're looking at momentous problems for the state, and we're just trying to get through it. That's really where we're at. It's a very human equation. You're seeing economic dislocations on a massive scale. And as you may have heard, Michigan, the number one state for unemployment, is at 12.9% now, and now there's new estimates that we could be as high as 20% by the end of the year, or even the end of the summer by some people. So this is a time for us to hunker down and work together, and we've been doing that, Republicans and Democrats in the delegation, throughout the community. It's really been the one silver lining is the way the community came together to deal with this.
Congressman, just as an aside, what do experts believe could be responsible for another huge jump in Michigan's unemployment in the next few months?
Well, remember, Greg, these were announced job losses. They haven't started yet. And once you start with the companies themselves, you can already see what's happening with dealerships, not only in Michigan and the Midwest, but across America. And as the companies are now smaller, you're going to see the supply chain of the manufacturers get smaller. And as you see from that occurring, then you'll see the companies, the small businesses and shops that supply and sell to these employees having trouble. It's a cascading effect. And in Michigan, as the heartland, a place to put the world on wheels, no one's going to feel it harder than us.
Talking with Michigan Congressman Thaddeus McCotter. And Congressman, you and I have also talked a lot about the TARP plan, which you vigorously opposed and are still opposed to. We learned this week that about 10 of the banks that received the TARP money have been given permission to pay that money back. We also see today from Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner that the Obama administration is not planning to impose salary caps on executives of those TARP money receiving companies, but they do want independent shareholder control over that type of compensation. What do you make of their approach to that?
Well, you just have to listen to the statement they're being allowed to repay the taxpayers. It should tell you the type of TARP world we're in. Could you imagine loaning somebody tens of billions of dollars and saying, well, I've decided to allow you to repay me now? That's crazy. First, there should be a system in place that the money that comes back in is dealt with appropriately and is returned back to the taxpayers, deficit, debt reduction, and others. And that's where you really have to do. Now, in terms of the companies paying them back, I understand that. I appreciate that. But let's not lose focus. A lot of TARP money has gone through AIG. That taxpayer obligation stayed with AIG while the money went through the back door to very many of these TARP recipients. So when some of these TARP recipients say they want to pay back the money that they were loaned, that's true. But they also are sitting there free and clear with a whole lot of billions of taxpayer money that went through AIG that they aren't going to repay. They're still telling us that somehow AIG will do that. That's one of the biggest concerns that I have right now.
What's your opinion on whether there should be any sort of government imposition of salary or compensation? There's another czar. We mentioned one before. Now there's a pay czar coming in, the same guy who oversaw the distribution of money to the 9/11 victims' families. What do you make of this additional bureaucracy?
Well, as I like to remind people, first, I don't think anybody should really want to be a czar if they understand what happened to the Romanovs. It's usually not a good deal. Might start off okay with high compensation, but the end result isn't good. In the final analysis, if you receive taxpayer bailout assistance, you should have to comply with certain standards to ensure that you're not enriching yourself, because it's unfair to the taxpayers. So whether they set up a czar to do it or whether they did it in-house, it's really kind of silly, I think, to call somebody a pay czar. I think you should just have regulations in place so that people, with certainty, that people know what's going to happen if they have to ask. You know, if these companies have asked for it, I think they should be sane, they should be sound, but I think they should be there. Because if you were loaning money to someone out of your own pocket and they were continuing to pay themselves at a high rate of compensation, you'd say to yourself, well, why are you doing that? If you had so much money, why are you borrowing it from me? And I think the taxpayers ask the same thing. But again, pay czar, I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, a character in Orson Welles' War of the Worlds.
Congressman, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you, sir, as always, for your time.
Thanks.
Michigan Congressman Thaddeus McCotter represents the state's 11th Congressional District, member of the House Republican leadership. This is Dateline Washington.